beginning to get into the 1700s. The early 1700s can be seen as a time when Am Yisrael is, on the one hand, reacting towards the past disillusionments of the fall from Mashiach, of Shavsat Tzvi, and the Gezeros Tachatat, and other tzaros that were socially and economically very, very uprooting, very tumultuous, which left Am Yisrael very, very much in the state of Yayush. That's looking back at the past, coming into the future. They're coming into a future where the world is changing, and especially changing politically and philosophically because of the beginning of the Enlightenment and the major changes that's happening in the way the Goyim think and the way the political structure of the various nations is changing. And so we have to look at the 1700s, especially the early 1700s, in terms of these two forces. As we move later into the 1700s, the first force becomes less of a problem, but the second force becomes more of a problem. Of course, moving into the 1800s, that's the main problem, enlightenment, reform, etc. Last week I spent a little time on the Ramchal, as a person, his influence, and I used that article in the Jewish Action of several years back by Rabbi Kessin called The Light of the Ramchal, which he gave a brief biography of the Ramchal and stressed Ramchal's opponents, mainly the Maharam Chagiz, the Moshe Chagiz, who was a strong opponent of the Ramchal, especially the Ramchal's interest in Kabbalah. What I didn't mention, or maybe just barely mentioned last week, is that the Ramchal had another opponent, and he's becomes a very important person as we move on through the 1700s. He is Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who is the son, was the son of the Chacham Tzvi. Chacham Tzvi was the Rabbi Tzvi Ashkenazi, who was famous for Shalos Hatshuvos Chacham Tzvi that he wrote, and he was the Rav of the Ashkenaz community in Amsterdam, where, by the way, is where the Ramchal went when he was put in Tehran. In Venice, in Italy, he moved to Amsterdam, where he lived. I since read, I think in Larry Wine's book, that he supported himself in Amsterdam as a diamond polisher. He completely gave up writing, teaching, and just spent a number of years in Amsterdam as a private citizen worker. And that's why he didn't have any great opposition in Amsterdam, because he continued to study Kabbalah and to write Svarim, but he just did it privately and didn't publish it or teach it. The Svarim that he wrote and published there are the Mesillas Yesharim and the Das Tevunos, both of which are mildly acceptable. And so he didn't violate any Cherem, and he didn't have any tremendous opposition in Amsterdam. And then from Amsterdam he moved to Eretz Yisrael, where he died at a very young age, at the age of 39, in Tveria. And where he's buried until today, you can see his matzeva. Rabbi Yaakov Emden was also part of the opposition to the Ramchal, although in his later life, Rabbi Yaakov Emden had charata and felt that the Ramchal justified, the only thing he was guilty of was teaching Kabbalah to people who aren't roy to listen to Kabbalah. And Rabbi Ben has a phrase in his little letter. He says, that's the only avera a person is guilty of. He writes something like, Yechelki imo. I wish my chelik is with him. But I'd like to move on now to the famous controversy, or the tragic controversy, between Rabbi Yaakov Emden and Rabbi Yonason Ibishus. Rabbi Emden himself, besides being the son of the Chacham Tzvi, was a very great person in his own right, and wrote a tremendous amount of Svarim, many which we don't have anymore, many which to this very day are still in Ksav Yad, but many, of course, which are published, including the various Shalos Hatshuvos, Shalos Hatshuvos Moru Ktsia, Shalos Hatshuvos She'elos Yavetz, and his Siddur, which is a very famous work, his Siddur and his Perish on the Siddur, and his Hagos on Shas, which is in every Vilna Shas, one of the more important Hagos in the back of just about every Masechta. The Raghav Emden, though, was a tremendous Kanoi, and among the things he was Makane for was, he was like, Rabbi Wein uses the term, which I wouldn't use, but I guess he get away with it. He used the term vigilante. Alright? In a certain way, Raghav Emden was like a vigilante. He was on guard against anything that smacked of Sabbateanism, of Shabsa'ut, of Shabsa'ut Svi's philosophy. And he found that Raghav Emden was that Rabbi Yohanan and Adshut, I'll say a little bit more about in a moment, was distributing kameos, amulets, charm. And somebody examined some of these amulets, and he felt that they contained evidence that Rabbi Yonas Naibschutz was guilty of believing in the Shabtai Tzvi philosophy. It was already 50, 60 years after Shabtai Tzvi died. As I explained, his philosophy continued, and there was still this suspicion. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden accused Rabbi Yonas Naibschutz of being a follower of Shabtai Tzvi, a secret follower of Shabtai Tzvi. Today, the sound starts astounding, because Rav Yonatan Naibschutz, we know, has a tremendous gadol, perhaps the greatest gadol in that time, just before the rise, the maturity of the Vilna Gaon. Rav Yonatan Naibschutz wrote the Svarim that you're familiar with from learning, Urim V'Tumim, Krasi U'Plasi, and then the other Svarim on Drush. Was talking about a major figure in Halacha, a major figure in Torah, and also a major Rav. Yonatan Naibschutz was a Rav in Prague, and later he was a Rav in a place called Ahu. Ahu is a famous community in Germany. Aleph Hei Vav stands for Altona, Hamburg, and Wandsbek. Three communities. The major one, of course, is Hamburg, which is a big city. But I think that Hamburg became a big city later on. And in earlier years, hundreds of years ago, was a city equal in size to these two other cities, Altona and Wandsbek. And it was seen to have been one organized Jewish community there, and for many, many hundreds of years, they had one Rav. There are many, many famous Rabbanim of Ahu. One of them was Rav Yonatan Naibschutz, who accused someone, he was a Gadol Hador, a chaver of major Sfarim in Halacha and in Agada, and a major leader, of being guilty of following Shabtai Tzvi was a pretty serious charge. When Rav Yonatan was accused, he was already the Rav in Ahu. I'm not sure historically of which Sfarim he had written already and which Sfarim not, but he had already written some Sfarim, and they were acknowledged to be one of the Gadol Hador. To become Rav of Ahu, I mean, that was a major, major rabbinic appointment. And Raghav Emden, who also lived in Ahu as a private citizen, by this time, when he challenged him and accused him of being guilty, this is a major, major accusation. What happened, of course, is that there were those who defended Rav Yonatan Naibschutz, those who defended Raghav Emden, and the fire of Machlokas spread throughout Europe. Each one of them enlisted different gedolim on their side. Some of the Israel believed Raghav Emden was right. Among them, Rav Zvihersh Lavin, who was the Rav of Berlin at that time. And then the other Gedolei Yisrael believed that Rav Yonatan Naibschutz was right. The major name that defended Rav Yonatan Naibschutz was Nodav Yehuda, Cheska Landau, whom we of course heard of. And the young man who also joined the fray on the side of Rav Yonatan Naibschutz was the Vilna Gaon. At this point in time, was a young man, the youngest of all the various people whom Rav Yonatan Naibschutz was able to get on his side. But the accusation was an astounding one, and Rav Emden supported it very fully. He tried to document it. He wrote little booklets, pamphlets, supporting his accusation. Hard to go into it to say who was right. You know, it's very, very hard to believe that someone like Rav Yonatan Naibschutz could be guilty of such a thing, especially since all the evidence that came out in later years indicate that there's no way that he was guilty of this. The thing that triggered the suspicion was the fact that Rav Yonah Sinaipshitz distributed Kameya. Kameya is a word you find in the Gemara. Gemara also speaks of a certain Gemara Masechta Shabbos, especially it speaks of Kameyos as being charms that if you wear around your neck, these charms are written according to a certain formula, they have a certain curative value. As I'll leave the Shulchan Aruch quote, the Kameya is known to work in the certain conditions you can wear it on Shabbos, in certain conditions you can't wear it on Shabbos. So whatever it is, it's a serious thing. It works. We don't know exactly how it's done, but Rav Yonah Sinaipshitz distributed such a Kameya, which is in English a charm or an amulet, if you use the word that's used, distributed some of these Kameyas. If you open up a Kameya, what's inside in a piece of parchment usually is some type of combination of letters which has a certain koach according to Kabbalah. Rav Yonah Emden felt that these Kameyas were full of the Shabbos free material. Interesting is that people to this very day still distribute Kameyas. There are people who are experts on writing Kameyas. And it's a Sefer I'm reading, which I'll share with you in a couple of weeks, biography of Akiva Eger. So Akiva Eger, who was certainly Shabbos free person, also wrote Kameyas, distributed Kameyas. Even I'll bring in a few examples of his Kameyas. But Rav Emden felt that this is a very wrong thing to do. And that these were evidence of Shabbos. The problem, of course, was, as many people have written since then, including Rav Cook had an interesting little essay about this, that if it would have just been a discussion between Rav Emden and Rav Yonah Sinaipshitz, they could have worked it out. If they didn't work it out, so it would have been a machlokas, like many times it's machlokas in halacha or even in personality. And the problem is that it got spread so far that wherever you went in Europe, you were categorized. Are you pro Yaakov Emden or pro Rav Yonah Sinaipshitz? And it split up families, it split up communities, and caused a tremendous amount of machlokas. It was a major trauma in history. Unfortunately, you can argue that this is maybe the first, in the period of time that we're discussing, the first inner machlokas within Klal Yisrael that really, really affected Klal Yisrael in a very deep way. Since the period of time we're discussing, since 1492,